Chapter 7. Birds chirped and flew among the branches of the many oaks, maples, chestnuts, hickories, and pines. The snow had melted. The temperature was at least 30 degrees warmer. About 20 yards away from us stood a deer, her short white tail twitching as she watched us between the trees. "Can you talk to it?" Tommy asked Freedom. "I don't think she understands English," Freedom joked, "but yes, I can communicate with most animals." "Hello!" called Liberty. "We come as friends. Take us to your leader." The deer just stood there watching us curiously. "Nope," Liberty said, "nothing. I hope that deer isn't a member of the hospitality committee, because if she is, I'm sending a complaint." I watched Freedom as she stared intently at the deer. Its tail stopped twitching, began to walk toward us. Soon the deer was only a couple of feet away, and Freedom walked over and stroked the side of its neck. "You're more than a horse whisperer," Tommy said. "No kidding," Liberty said. "You're like that girl who calls all her animal friends to help clean the dwarves' cottage. I hope we don't run into a witch with a poison apple. That would be bad."
"Check out all these tree stumps," Tommy said.
"What do you think they did with all these trees?" asked Freedom.
"I'm guessing they built houses," said Tommy. "I mean, I'm pretty sure that after they landed in the New World, they didn't check in at a Holiday Inn. There wasn't anything here. I mean, they basically were camping for months."
"Good point," said Freedom. "When I hunt or track animals with my grandfather, we camp for a couple of days, but then we get to go home." Tommy continued, "I used to go camping with my friend's dad all the time. He'd make us go really far and deep into the woods, and then we'd pitch our tent. My friend's mom hated it. She used to complain about not being able to plug in her hairdryer or take a shower. And that was after one day. I can't imagine what she'd be like after landing in the New World with the Pilgrims. Ha!"
Liberty looked all around and said, "Come to think of it, it doesn't look like there's a drive-through for miles around."
"Nope," I said, "no McDonald's, no Taco Bell, no Kentucky Fried Chicken, nothing. When the Pilgrims first landed, they had to figure out everything from scratch. So what they did was basically try to recreate the town where they'd lived in Holland."
"That's really cool," Tommy said.
"If I was building my own town from scratch, I think I'd start with a football field."
"Seriously?" asked Freedom, rolling her eyes.
"Before building a house?"
"Okay, well, maybe after my house," Tommy said.
"But that would be kind of cool for everyone to be able to hang out at the same place and have some entertainment. Of course, I would be the starting quarterback."
"Oh, and I would totally invite you, Freedom."
"Thanks," Freedom said. "But I'd for sure have built a house first, a warm house with a big fireplace, so I don't have to camp during the winter. After that, I'd want to build a stable for Liberty."
"Ah, thanks, Freedom, for thinking of me," said Liberty, "and maybe one of those jacuzzi tubs with the rotating jets to massage my back."
I ignored Liberty and said, "The Pilgrims kind of built a football field. Well, a large place for everyone to hang out or gather and meet. It was called a common house. It was the first thing they built."
"I can see several houses or buildings over there," said Freedom as she peered and pointed through the trees. "Is that the common house?"
I tried to look where Freedom was pointing and said, "I honestly can't really tell from here."
"What are we waiting for?" said Tommy. "I have a sword fighting lesson to get to."
As we got closer, I could see a dirt street with a row of 7 houses with thatched roofs. There were also 4 larger buildings. One of those must be the common house. 7 houses didn't seem like nearly enough to house the 102 pilgrims who arrived on the Mayflower.
I wonder if some chose to build a town somewhere else. That seemed unlikely since the Pilgrims signed the Mayflower Compact, so they all sort of decided to stick together. Actually, the Mayflower Compact was supposed to provide just and equal laws for everyone at Plymouth Plantation, the very place we were standing. I'd have to ask William Bradford when I saw him. I noticed the Mayflower was still anchored in Plymouth Harbor. Many pilgrims, mostly men, were doing various chores, chopping wood, mending roofs, tilling a field for a future garden. A teenage girl was dipping a bucket into a nearby brook. Another girl was reading a book to a small group of younger boys and girls under a big oak tree. Let's see if anybody's home, I said. I'm especially curious why there are only 7 houses. We approached the first house and found a teenage boy carving a piece of wood with a long knife. He was sitting on a chair that looked too fancy to have been made in America. He saw us approaching and he stopped carving. Hello there, young man, I said. I'm Rush Revere. You live here? Nah, I sleep across the way, he said. I just like sitting in Governor Bradford's chair. He brought it from England. We don't have many chairs. He eyed Liberty. Can I ride that horse? I looked at Liberty as he eyed the boy suspiciously. I turned back to the boy and asked, what's your name? Francis Billington, he said. Aren't you the kid who shot the musket on the Mayflower, nearly blew up the ship? Tommy accused. You can't prove it, Francis said, standing up and putting a knife inside a sheath. Well, maybe it was your brother, Tommy replied. You can't prove that either, Francis exclaimed. Well, Francis, do you know how to ride a horse, I asked. Any dimwit can ride a horse, he said. I've ridden thousands of horses. Thousands, I said, a bit surprised. Well, then, this one shouldn't be a problem for you. Liberty shook his head and stomped his hoof. It looks like he's twitching to give someone a ride, I said, smiling. Good. I hope he's fast. I like going fast. You have a stick so I can make him go faster? Liberty backed up and huffed. You shouldn't hit a horse with a stick, Freedom said, stepping forward, petting Liberty on his face. You're just a girl. What do you know? Said Francis. Tommy started forward, and I held him back. Very well, Francis, I said. Let's see what you can do. Liberty rolled his eyes and looked rather annoyed. I wasn't sure how this would play out, but I thought the ride could serve a purpose. I held Liberty's halter as Francis searched for a way to pull himself up into the saddle. He was a tall and wiry boy with curly brown hair. After a couple of unsuccessful attempts, he finally managed to swing his leg over the saddle. He looked as comfortable as someone trying to water ski for the first time. He grabbed Liberty's reins and he pulled left. Liberty didn't budge. He tried pulling to the right, but Liberty was immovable. I'd never used a bit with Liberty, and therefore he felt no pain every time Francis jerked the reins to the left or right. Stupid horse, Francis said. Why won't he move? I've ridden mules that are smarter than this. And that was the last thing he said on the back of Liberty, because the very next second the horse kicked up his hind legs and bucked Francis high into the air. Francis yelled loud enough for all of New England to hear. He landed on the thatched roof of the house across from William Bradford's home, but only for a second before the roof caved in and Francis fell with a thud. Francis Billington, yelled a woman's voice, how many times do I have to tell you to stop climbing where you don't belong? You have to admit he had it coming, said Liberty. Oh, look, there's William Bradford, said Tommy, pointing. He's coming out of that larger building. Good eye, Tommy, I said. Let's go say hi. We walked along the row of houses toward the common house, and as we approached William, I noticed how tired he looked. I didn't want to say anything because that would be a little rude, but he really looked a lot older than when we last saw him just a few months earlier. I couldn't really blame him. After all, he traveled across an entire ocean, a small boat, under the hardest conditions, landed in a new place that was completely barren, and needed to build a town for all the people who relied on his leadership. That makes me tired just thinking about it. Nevertheless, when William saw us, he smiled and turned to meet us. Hello, Russian Tommy. I've missed you. I assume you've been exploring again? Yes, we have, I said. This new world, it's a bounteous land. It's a lot bigger than England, Tommy said. Feels a lot bigger, but that's probably because of the endless forests and unsettled land. William agreed. I only wish I could join you, but for now my duty is here at Plymouth Plantation, and this must be your new friend with the horse. This is Freedom, I said. We've spent the last couple of months teaching Freedom the English language. She's an exceptional learner. I hoped Freedom would play along. Freedom, said William reverently. I have to say, I love that name. In fact, if I have a daughter someday, I think Freedom would be a wonderful name. Thank you, said Freedom slowly. Please excuse my grammar, as I have only just learned to speak your language. I was born on the 4th of July, so my mother felt like it was the perfect name for a special day. Your English is marvelous. Does the 4th of July have a special meaning for your family? Asked William. Freedom paused, realizing that the Pilgrims hadn't celebrated the 4th of July yet. The Revolutionary War hadn't happened. The Declaration of Independence wouldn't be signed for another 156 years. It was only 1620 where we were, not 1776. She looked to me for an answer. As my mind raced for a way to help Freedom, we heard the sound of a loud bell. Either we're late for school or it's time for dinner, Tommy said. I hope dinner, Liberty whispered. Neither. That bell means Indians, said William as he began searching the surrounding hills. Pilgrims from every direction were heading for the common house. Women and children left their homes and men returned from the field and forest. William pointed to a neighboring hill and shouted, There! A single Indian on Watson Hill! And sure enough, a lone Indian walked with long strides toward a brook that bordered the hill where the Pilgrim settlement was. William spoke loudly so all within earshot could hear him. Do not fire your muskets. The Indian walks boldly, but he does not look hostile. He's only one. We are many. There is no need to fear. God is with us. I was amazed watching this group of pilgrims listen to William so closely. He was clearly the leader that they turned to for direction, just like on the boat. They all put their muskets down and quietly watched. Nobody else spoke as the Indian crossed the brook and began climbing the pathway up Cole's Hill. We were now close enough to see that he was a tall man. His hair was black and long, but his face had no hair, unlike most of the pilgrim men. However, the biggest difference was the fact that the Indian was practically naked. A piece of leather covered his waist, but his legs and chest were bare. Hold your ground, William said firmly to his line of defense. The women and children had gathered together farther behind us. I looked back. I saw several holding Bibles. One mother covered her daughter's eyes. Others had turned away from the approaching intruder. Finally, when the Indian was only 5 yards from us, he stopped, his path clearly blocked by the barricade of pilgrims. His eyes were the color of tree bark. He had a large bow slung over one shoulder and a quiver of arrows over the other. Then he did something completely unexpected. He smiled and saluted us with much delight and said, Welcome, Englishman. Wait, did he just speak English? Tommy whispered. How is that even possible? And he doesn't even look scared. He just walked up to us like it happens every day. Shh, let's listen, I whispered back. A gust of wind caught the back of the Indian's long black hair and it swayed up and over his shoulder. As he scanned the crowd of pilgrims, his eyes caught the movement of Freedom's silky black hair, which also waved in the wind. The Indian stared at her for just a moment, and then turned to William Bradford and said, Me, Somerset, friend to Englishman. William responded, Welcome, Somerset. I am William Bradford, a leader of this colony we call Plymouth Plantation. How did you learn to speak English? Me learn English from fishing men who come for cod. Somerset stretched out his arms and said, This place, this? And he paused, pointing at the harbor. Are we playing charades? Whispered Liberty so no one else could hear. Because if we are, my guess is harbor. I offered the suggestion to Somerset and said, Harbor? Yes. Somerset smiled. This harbor called Patuxet. Liberty whispered, Am I good or am I good? Somerset continued, Death come to this harbor, great sickness, much plague. Many Pocanicats die, no more to live here. You're saying that the Indians who lived in this area died of the plague, said William? Yes, said Somerset. Many, many die, much sadness. And you, your people, much die from cold and sickness. Massasoit knows, waiting, watching. William turned to Miles and then back to Somerset and said, We come in peace. We only want freedom to live in peace. Who is Massasoit? Massasoit, great and powerful leader of this land. He watching you. He knows your people dying. He lives south and west in place called Pekaniket. 2-day journey.
Well, you must be hungry, William said.
He saw Tommy and Freedom standing nearby and said, Tommy, Freedom, run back to where the women are gathered and ask them for a plate of food and drink for our new friend.
You got it,
Tommy said as he and Freedom raced off to where the women and children were gathered. William turned back to Somerset.
Please tell Massasoit that we come as friends. We are his friends. Yes, many of our people have died, but we are strong.
Miles Standish clearly wasn't as quick to believe Samoset meant no harm. Since he was the main military man of the town, I can understand why. He probably felt he needed to defend and protect his people. Standish was wearing his helmet and breastplate. He firmly held his musket in both hands as if to say, Look here, don't make any false moves. His trademark sword was, as always, hanging in his waist. Miles said, Tell Massasoit that we have guns, bullets, armor, powerful cannons, and we are here to stay. We hope we can be friends.
Together, said Samoset. Massasoit and William Bradford, together.
Yes, said William, together in peace. Samoset smiled like he did when he first saluted us.
Me tell Massasoit. Bring Squanto. He speak better English. He help.
Again, Somerset began gesturing with his hands, clearly trying to communicate the right word.
Translate, whispered Liberty.
Translate, I repeated loudly to Somerset.
Yes, said Somerset, pointing at me.
William, Miles, Elder Brewster, and the rest of the pilgrims looked impressed by my guesses. I turned back to Liberty and whispered, You're making me look really good.
I usually do, Liberty softly replied.
Standish, still not quite as welcoming as Bradford, said forcefully, Who is Squanto?
Somerset continued, Squanto translate for Massasoit. Squanto speak like Englishman. Help Massasoit and William Bradford together, in peace.
Well, we look forward to meeting Massasoit and Squanto, said William.
Will you bring them?
Yes, bring them. Return in 5 moons. But first, stay with William Bradford tonight. Need rest, food. Tomorrow, go to Pekaniket and Massasoit.
Tommy and Freedom returned with a plate of food and a flask, handed them to Samoset.
Please, eat, said William.
Liberty whispered into my ear, I can't believe that he's not scared.
I'm scared just watching. Reminds me of a late-night movie I saw once.
Well, I didn't see the whole movie because I was too scared. I mean, if I were Somerset, I think I'd wonder if my plate of food was poisoned. Or if I were the pilgrims, I'd wonder if Somerset wasn't secretly plotting to have all his friends sneak into the town in the middle of the night and...
You watch too many movies, I whispered back.
I'm guessing William had a gut feeling that he relied so much on God's grace to protect them traveling across the rough waters for so many months. I mean, he just had to trust that this would be okay, too. It's really pretty amazing.
Either that... For Miles has a backup plan, Liberty softly replied. He doesn't seem to be joking around with that musket.
Thank you, said Somerset. Before he took the plate from Freedom, he reached out to touch the yellow feather in her hair. Freedom handed him the plate of food and then reached up and unclipped the feather. She said, a gift from us to you.
Somerset leaned over and Freedom clipped the feather in his hair.
A fine gift, said Somerset.
Then he smelled the food with a curious look on his face.
William pointed to each food item. This is a biscuit, butter, cheese, pudding, and roasted duck.
As Somerset used his hands to sample each item, William turned to us and whispered,
Seems like an honest fellow, eager to befriend us.
Yes, but can we trust him to stay with us overnight? Asked Miles suspiciously.
Rush Revere. What do you think, said William.
Well, I cleared my throat, said, assuming he was sent to us by Massasoit, if we turn him away, we may offend him, which may offend Massasoit, and we can't afford to do that.
William turned to Elder Brewster, who said, I agree. Our kindness may be our best ally.
Yes, I agree, said William. I propose we let him stay the night.
Liberty again whispered to me, William really put you on the spot with that question. I couldn't have dug you out of that one. Nice job answering him. Maybe you should get your own radio talk show. Do you ever think of that? You know, callers call in with questions and you give them advice and stuff? I mean, I'd call you totally.
We turned back to Somerset, who had finished the entire plate of food, was now drinking from the flask.
Me like much, said Somerset.
Come, Somerset, I would like to learn more about this harbor and anything else you can tell us about living here, William said.
This time, Tommy leaned over and whispered, You think Somerset really gives him the real scoop, or do you think he'll hold back and wait for his next move like a game of chess? I mean, he sure trusts William a lot without even knowing it. So maybe he really does tell him everything he knows about this land.
I softly replied, According to everything I've read, Somerset and especially Squanto became friends with William. I think they realized right away that they could help each other. As the pilgrim leaders led Somerset into the common house, I decided this was a perfect opportunity to time jump to our next destination. Guys, I don't know when or if we'll be eating with the pilgrims. They seem pretty busy in there, so I suggest we time travel. Get a quick bite to eat and then time jump back in 5 moons or 5 days when Somerset returns with Massasoit and Squanto. Liberty, you catch that? All I heard was blah, 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 get a quick bite to eat, blah, 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 said Liberty. Anything else important that you said? I'm in, said Tommy. All I had for breakfast was a stick of gum.
Is that what they call a breakfast of champions? Freedom teased.
What did you eat for breakfast? Tommy asked Freedom.
Are you kidding? I was too excited to eat, Freedom said.
Well, then let's rush back to the present. Liberty,
I imagine you're ready, I asked.
I was ready to eat when we got here, Liberty said.
Within minutes, we found a secluded place just within the forest. When we jumped through the time portal, we were standing in a parking lot behind a dumpster with a sign that read Property of Foster's Family Diner, Fast and Friendly Service on Wheels. As we came out from behind the dumpster, we saw several old-fashioned cars parked in front of the diner. Waitresses with pink blouses, poodle skirts, and roller skates were taking orders and rolling back and forth between the diner and the cars.
Liberty wasted no time and trotted up to an empty parking space. Freedom and Tommy were riding on Liberty as I followed from behind.
You seem like you've been here before, said Freedom.
Oh, I love a good 50s diner, and this place is especially good, said Liberty in a hushed voice.
And I added, No surprise we ended up here. This is Liberty's favorite place to eat.
Tommy asked, So you can go and eat anywhere, any time in history?
Any time in American history. However, I've tried to avoid bumping into myself. I mean, that could be problematic.
So what do you recommend on the menu? Asked Tommy.
Okay, I'm sure everything is good, said Liberty. The menu has the usual hamburgers, hot dogs, fries, and shakes. But I always get the veggie supreme with extra lettuce, pickles, tomatoes, cucumbers, spinach, sprouts, and guacamole on a sesame seed bun.
Guacamole? Asked Freedom. Seriously?
Of course, smiled Liberty. Everything tastes better with guacamole.
I think everything tastes better with bacon, said Tommy.
Well, sure, if you're a carnivore, Liberty grunted. I tried bacon once. I thought it tastes like dirty socks soaked in lard.
You've actually tried dirty socks soaked in lard? Freedom asked skeptically.
Blech! Gross! Who in their right mind would taste a dirty sock soaked in lard? I mean, that's disgusting, said Liberty.
Freedom complained, but you just said...
Freedom was cut off by the roller skating waitress who asked for our orders. Freedom, Tommy, and I each ordered a cheeseburger, fries, and shake combo. And I ordered Liberty's usual 3 veggie supremes, extra everything.
Don't you think it's strange that she didn't ask why we're dressed like this, Tommy asked.
Not really. As I said, this isn't our first time here, I said with a wink.
As we ate our food, Freedom said, It's just really sad that the pilgrims never had this kind of luxury. They never got to go to a diner and have food prepared for them in minutes. They had to shoot a duck, kill a pig, or grow a garden, Liberty added between mouthfuls.
What I'm saying is that we have it easy, Freedom finished.
True, Tommy said. I'm pretty sure I would have starved. I sighed. Sadly, many of them did starve. In fact, that first winter was called the starving time. When we met Somerset, I counted the number of pilgrims who were gathered outside. It was about half the number who arrived on the Mayflower. Oh, that's what Somerset meant when he said that Massasoit knew that many of the pilgrims had died, right? Asked Freedom. Correct, I said. It was probably a combination of lack of food, the severe cold, and disease. As the waitress rolled away after offering us each a free peppermint candy, I said, why don't we all take a potty break before we head back? Good idea, Tommy said. The other luxury that pilgrims didn't have is flushing toilets.